I'm speaking with Patrick Corcoran. He's the Hazards Outreach Specialist for Oregon State University and the Oregon Sea Grant Program. And the topic for today is going to be tsunamis and earthquakes. Patrick, welcome.
Thank you, Roger.
Let's start with something very specific. I'm in Warrenton.
Okay.
I'm there looking for a car. I'm doing some shopping. I'm out at Fort Stevens having a good time walking on the beach. And I feel the ground shake. It's an earthquake. What do I do?
Well, perceiving that the earthquake is a warning is the first thing. The second thing is, where in Warrenton are you? Because Warrenton is a large community with high ground and safe spots in different locations. You mentioned maybe shopping for a vehicle. So maybe you're up on that hill with the Home Depot and Costco and Lums in that area there. That area is the destination for Warrenton in terms of earthquakes and tsunamis. So that's a situation where you need to know enough to stay put.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're up there and you feel an earthquake, stay put and be prepared to be there for a while.
So if I'm in downtown Warrenton, or if I live in Warrenton and the same thing happens, the earth shakes and it's pretty hard, I need to have a place in mind where I'm going to go. Can you mention some of those places in Warrenton?
Sure, and looking at the evacuation map, they pop up. So if you're downtown on Main, Juniper Ridge is a good destination. Heading up towards the high school, turning at the elementary school, and the cemetery is fairly high ground. Moving west, interestingly, people sometimes are hesitant to move west to get to high ground, but the soccer fields on Ridge Road are high enough, and those are the destinations, the assembly areas where helicopters may land and that kind of a thing. You don't need to necessarily get to those assembly areas, but you need to get to those areas of high ground. So downtown Warrenton, Juniper Ridge, the cemetery, and the high points to the west.
I was surprised looking at the maps that places I wouldn't think were in the safety area are, like Coffinberry Lake. Actually, on the map, appears to be safe, and I would perceive that as a low spot. So it's good to get those maps. Where do you get those if you want to get a map?
The best place to get the maps are online, and Oregon Tsunami Clearinghouse would be the three keywords your search engine could be pointed to, and you'll find all kinds of maps for the entire coast. So if you're planning a trip, you can check these things out. Also, for Clatsop County, we're going to be getting our new maps produced in, probably 2013, probably published 2014. And that's going to reflect the latest research and kind of a more nuanced sense of the inundation for Clatsop County. So the old maps are kind of running out. They're kind of hard to find. They're available online, but our new maps will be coming out shortly.
Can we, we're talking about Warrenton so far, but I want to talk about the other communities down the coast, but can we skip across the river first? Are you familiar with Long Beach
sure
and
thing.
Its problems
mm-hmm.
or the peninsula? I was sort of surprised again looking at the maps. I guess I thought if you weren't near El Waco, you were in real trouble. But there actually is, at the northern end of the peninsula, there's some safe ground as well. Can you tell us about the peninsula and its problems?
That's correct. And elevation is key, and certainly El Waco is hilly and up. From Long Beach to Ocean Park, it's a flatter stretch. Ocean Park has some sand dunes that are fairly high, and then the Ledbetter area has areas that are fairly high. Unfortunately, all the people live down in Long Beach and not up at Ledbetter, and so people need to understand where those destinations are in Long Beach Peninsula, particularly critical in that area.
I think I read if you can get somewhere around 250th and get up to U Street, you're in pretty good shape there. So it's good to know that you don't have to just head south and try to get to El Waco when that happens.
Correct, because we're going to need to go where the highest elevation we can get in 15 minutes, probably on foot. So the potentially excellent places may not be the places you can get to. And so we need to know where's high enough in the places that we live, work, play, pray, shop.
High enough that I can walk to. Well, let's deal with that a little bit. I think a lot of us maybe are thinking, okay, when the shaking stops, I'll jump into my car and I'll drive somewhere safe. What's wrong with that theory?
If you can do it, and it's an obvious thing you can do, especially if you're injured, elderly, or mobily challenged, I would say do it. Mm-hmm. And this is not advice that I'm supposed to give, but I'm really bumped up with the realities of human nature. And that's what people are going to do. My job isn't to tell people what to do, it's to tell people what to expect.
Right.
So I would say with car evacuation strategies, it's a good plan B. But it is not enough to say, oh, we're going to jump in the car and drive somewhere. Why? Because your car is probably in a garage with an electric garage door opener that will have no power. or if you could, you know, operate it manually, your home will have shifted in 5 minutes of earthquake such that your garage door is not going to smoothly slide open. If you can get out of your garage, the big tree in your front yard is now over your driveway. If you can get by that, you've got power lines and bridges. You've now wasted 14 of your 15 minutes getting to the end of the block in a failed car strategy. So cars are very comfortable. We have a thing about them, but understand the risks. Many people in Japan fled by cars and died when if they would have just run up into the high ground nearby, maybe uncomfortable being in the woods, they would have lived. So cars are a two-edged sword. People are going to make decisions in the moment. Just understand what the risks and rewards are.
We have lots of bridges in our area that we're not even aware of on a day-to-day basis. Short, small bridges that take us over creeks and streams, and they may not survive the earthquake.
What happens often with bridges is the actual structure survives, but the earth that is up to the bridge, that jiggles out during the earthquake part. So, for example, a big example is our Storia Megler Bridge. That suspension steel bridge will probably do some flexing and may well be okay. But the on-ramps leading up to it will have settled, and so you may have a foot or 18-inch gap between the on-ramp and the actual bridge structure. So if it's at night and you're driving like a crazy person because you just experienced an earthquake, you could very easily lose an axle approaching some bridge and injure yourself in your car because of the earthquake damage to our physical infrastructure, including roads. The roads after the earthquake will not be the roads that you drive today. So again, another thing to keep in mind when you're planning your strategies and tempted to use a car. As tragic as it was, the fact that there were so many digital cameras in Japan and the fact that it happened at 3:30 in the afternoon in the daylight really provided us a lot of good information of visual observation, both for scientific understanding, but also that emotional impact of, oh my goodness, this is what they're talking about. And it's important, I think, to state that the North Coast has gotten what Japan got 20 times in the last 10,000 years. So this isn't something that might happen. This is something that happens here regularly. It's been 312 years before white settlement.
Right.
And so we don't think it happens here, but the geological evidence under our feet suggests that it certainly does. And just because we moved here, that doesn't end geologic processes.
Right. What we have the potential of having here is something at least as strong as what Japan experienced, a 9-point earthquake because of the Cascadia Fault. What we saw in the videos is that people couldn't stand up. The ground was shaking so hard that you basically were down on the ground. And it lasted for quite a long time, 5 minutes or so. So maybe the first question is, how do we survive that? If you're in your home and this happens and things are falling and twisting and bending and turning, how do you get through that?
Great question. And the simple answer is avoid things from bonking you on the head. Earthquakes don't kill people. Stuff falling on people's head during earthquakes kill people. So duck, cover, and hold is the phrase to keep in mind. Duck under a table, hold on until the shaking stops, and then evacuate to high ground. So that it's pretty simple. A lot of these instructions for dealing with this event are not complicated. They're fairly easy. Duck, cover, and hold. Don't let stuff fall on your head. Now, executing that in the moment is going to be the challenge. I was speaking to a gal who was in Chile when that magnitude 8 happened in 2010, and I said, so did you go underneath the desk like you were supposed to? And she said, Pat, that desk was bouncing across the floor. I mean, I couldn't get under that desk.
Right.
So there's what we plan and then what we have to do in the moment. So the critical message is protect yourself from things falling down. When this happens here, a few hundred will die in the earthquake, several thousand will die in the tsunami. So the relative danger of earthquake to tsunami in a subduction zone scenario is the earthquake isn't the problem. It's the inundation and the inundation zones after that's the problem. In planning, there's sort of classical and jazz approaches. You know, the classical approach is linear, sequential, this happens, I do this, it's very thought out. Well, the jazz approach is you have some principles, and then in the moment you sort of go with those principles. And we plan for earthquakes and tsunamis in sort of a classic form. Well, this will happen and then we do this. In reality, once the earthquake happens, all bets are off. You're going to remember what you remember and those first principles of protecting yourself during the earthquake and then immediately moving to high ground afterwards. Those are your compass points.
And so the key there is we need to know wherever we are, because we don't just live in our homes all the time. We travel, we go and shop, we go and recreate, we do all kinds of different things. We need to have a pretty good grasp, those of us who live in this region, of where the safe places to go are on the Long Beach Peninsula and where they are all the way along the coast where we go. So take us down the coast. Okay, we've been to Warrenton and we've talked a little bit about what's safe there and where we might go as we head south from there.
Okay, and we're talking about the earthquake scenario where we get the earthquake here.
Right.
As distinguished from when the earthquake happens somewhere else like March 11th. We're talking about when we get what Japan got. Very good. So working down the coast, we talked about Warrenton, big community, several places with high spots, but there's also a lot of flat spots in between. Moving down to Gerhardt, elevation is king, and so it might be counterintuitive, but if you're at the fire station or the Pacific Way Cafe and you feel a large earthquake, the highest ground you can get to is over in the golf course, and the highest part of the golf course is up by the McMiniman's sand trap. And so that would be the destination in Gerhardt. Golf course, sand trap. It's tempting to think, oh, well, I would get in my car and drive east. Right. But looking at the map, going over those dunes, you have to go through too many low spots to get to anything higher than the golf course. So again, the calculation isn't where's the perfect spot. The calculation is if I'm at that intersection in Gerhardt, where's the safest place I can get to in the time that I have.
And given that there's room also, I guess it makes sense if you are at McMiniman's, for example, even within that structure, you can go higher in the structure.
Definitely.
Get up in a
Boy, those new hotel rooms are going to be going real quick, I guarantee you, up on the third floor.
Well, we saw that in Japan. People were up on the top floors of some buildings and underneath was inundated. But given that the building is built well enough, you have a chance of surviving.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So south from Gerhardt.
Then we move into Seaside. And Seaside has a lot of people in a vulnerable spot. The geography of Seaside is such that you've got the Neawana Creek, Neocoxee, and the Canicum River, and these north-south parallel waterways that are basically in the way of the direction we want to go, which mm-hmm. is east and uphill. Mm-hmm. Sunset Hills is high enough in the center part of Seaside. On the south, there's the cove where the surfers are, and then Tillamook Head up to the condos up high. There are, again, a couple of high strategic high spots. Seaside has done a good job in developing a walking map. I know Tom Horning did a lot of research in walking around town from low places to high places and actually calculating how long it would take to get from this neighborhood in Seaside to their high ground or that neighborhood in Seaside to their high ground. So the fire departments in City Hall have those maps, and they're good things to familiarize ourselves with.
Now, is that generally true with fire departments in each of the towns have maps?
Yes, your fire stations and city halls are going to be the places that are supposed to have the maps, and so go bother them and make sure they do. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, the maps for Clatsop County are starting to get thin because they're the original version, and we're getting the new improved version in about a year or two. And mm-hmm. so online is probably the best place for getting those maps.
The ones online are updated and
you can get all the updated ones. For example, Cannon Beach is updated. That was the first one. And if you're heading to the south coast, those maps have been updated as well. They're working their way north. Apparently, the Clatsop County, Clatsop Plains, is a very interesting place for modeling. And so they're really sharpening their pencils for the Clatsop County maps, and we'll get ours in a couple years.
Well, give us those search terms again to find them online. Probably
sure thing.
There is repeating.
Sure thing. Just go using your search engine. Just the keywords would be Oregon Tsunami Clearinghouse. And that will take you to a Department of Geology and Mineral Industries website that has different kinds of maps. They'll have evacuation maps, which we're talking about, that show the worst possible case scenario and where you'd have to get out of the way of. But then there's also inundation maps, which show a little more nuanced sense of where the water actually might come up. And then there is, for example, the 379 line maps, which are the official maps that say, waterward of these, you can't build hospitals and schools. Mm-hmm. So those are identified on that website. The evacuation maps are the things that we want to look at. They show where the destination spots are, assembly areas, and that kind of a thing. So Oregon Tsunami Clearinghouse, snorkel around on that page, and you'll find all kinds of good stuff on there.
Now, Seaside has a fair number of high-rise hotels and so on. What is your take on those as places to go?
If I was down in Seaside, experienced an earthquake, and maybe was injured or was with people that weren't very mobile, I saw a building that was still obviously structurally okay, probably more the newer buildings, the largest building down in downtown Seaside, I would go up into the top floors of those buildings. My first choice would be to diddy bop up to Sunset Heights and be at a high elevation. But again, mobility or injured, that's a good second choice.
Grabbing the best option available to you at that moment.
Again, the Jazz strategy. I would love to be up on that hill, but I'm standing in front of this building with elderly parents, right, and we're going up into the top of this building, period.
But keeping in mind the elevator isn't working, probably.
Nope, that's right.
Because the earthquake is
knocking
out.
That's
right.
And I would go up the stairs.
Well, take us further south from there, then. We've had a beer at McMinimum's. We've we've climbed up over Tillamook Head and Seaside, so now we're heading south from there.
And we're in Cannon Beach. And Cannon Beach and Seaside are very different communities. Seaside has a lot of people in a flat spot, and Cannon Beach has fewer people in a hillier spot. And the importance of that is up is safety, and so Cannon Beach has less distance for people to go to be high enough after the earthquake. Up is higher in Cannon Beach. Now, Ecola Creek gets in the way in a very critical part of town, and they're struggling with ways to bridge the creek. And I think that's a very good idea. So Cannon Beach, you can actually see your destinations. If you're down in front of Haystack Rock, I mean, you can see where the high ground is, and it's not that far. Cannon Beach also does a real good job as far as community education. They have supplies cached in the hills. They have programs where people who live at high ground are welcoming their house, opening their house to others. They have committees that are educating different groups and visitors. And so Cannon Beach has really stepped up in doing a lot of things as far as preparedness.
That's where that tongue-in-cheek saying comes from, cultivate friends in high places.
Exactly, right. That's right. Make friends in high places.
Now, looking at the maps for Cannon Beach, the flip side of that is that Cannon Beach, it looks like a fair amount of downtown Cannon Beach probably gets inundated if there's a significant tsunami.
Ecola Creek apparently creates a canyon underwater, and that tends to funnel the water. So there are simulations of the wave heights coming up into Ecola Creek in that area are higher than, for example, in Seaside.
Yeah.
So the tsunami, what they're learning with the mapping is the nuances on different places of the coast, which is really terrific to understand that. So yes, there are hot spots in these different communities, and that's certainly one in Cannon Beach.
We've talked about the different communities as we go down south, and I guess we could even go further from there. Does Tillamook have similar problems? Or
oh, absolutely. Manzanita is just over Neocani Mountain. Manzanita has been also very progressive and very good in terms of understanding their risk, their vulnerability, and working with their public and community people and fire departments for people to have a heads up. They are really taking this Map Your Neighborhood program seriously, where they have block captains that have a map of their block and have a sense of where the people that have an oxygen machine are and the people that have a generator are. So when bad things happen, they can get together. It hasn't gone to the point yet, but I think it's a reasonable idea to start understanding where people who take medications like you. If I'm on blood pressure pills and my buddy up on the hill has gotten blood pressure pills, well, I'm going to go running up there because we can split pills for a few days.
Yeah.
These are the kind of things that the progressive communities are thinking through. As we move into Tillamook County, there's a lot more flat, vulnerable places. But the entire Oregon coast can be characterized as lots of flat, vulnerable places with steep, high enough places interspersed.
Now, Tillamook itself, the sense is when you're there that you're further from the ocean because it's not immediately visible as it is
Correct.
In Seaside or Cannon Beach. But that doesn't necessarily mean safe, or does it? Is it far enough in?
That doesn't necessarily mean safe. In Japan, I mean, there were a couple, you know, a few miles inland. The community where the airport was, and you saw the water coming in the airport, Sendai, the waves there, the water inundated up in 3-4 miles inland because it's so flat. So it's a function of geography. Tillamook is far from the ocean, but it's still fairly flat until you get kind of in town and up towards the fairgrounds. That's what the beauty of the maps are. And the new maps in Tillamook County have been fairly sobering as far as how far the water would be expected in the worst case scenario to inundate Tillamook.
Well, what haven't I asked you so far that I should have? What things are we missing in this discussion?
Well, all of our discussion comes around to the question of, so what? Well, all this stuff is interesting, but what do I need to know? What are the things we need to know? And there are three. And the first thing all residents of the North Coast need to know is the difference between the two kind of tsunamis we get. So March 11th, 2011 is a good example. What we here experienced was what we call a distant event. The earthquake, which is the bad part, happened a distance away. It happened in Japan. We did not feel the earthquake. We did not immediately in 15 minutes have tsunamis coming ashore. Instead, we had 9 hours before very small waves came and we had plenty of warnings on TV and everything else, and basically we needed to evacuate the beach. Mm-hmm. Nobody needed to go to Hillsboro. Nobody needed to go to the column. We needed to not be on the beach, period. The other kind of tsunami we get is like what Japan got, like what we have gotten 20 times in the past 10,000 years, where we here experience, like we were talking, the earthquake. And we know that that is our warning that in 15 to 30 minutes, we're going to be getting tsunami wave trains like Japan got. So very big distinction between the two kinds of tsunami scenarios. Distant events happen fairly frequently. Local events happen less frequently, but they're really bad. It's also been 312 years since the last one, so we're well within the window of recurrence of getting what Japan got.
I guess one important thing about the event right here, the one where we feel the earthquake ourselves, is that you can't really wait for someone to tell you what to do.
Why do you need to wait for someone to tell you to get to high ground? I'm telling you that right now.
Well,
the earthquake
is
your warning. When you feel the earthquake, get to high ground. That excuse is no longer on your list.
I think, you know, human nature, again, a lot of us would want to turn on the radio or say, well, is this really a time when I need to do it? Do I need to go?
Yes.
Do I need to go?
Those people will be called deceased.
So if you feel the earthquake, go.
Exactly. And we don't have many earthquakes here. Okay?
Right.
So the next earthquake you feel... What the advice is, if it's longer than 30 seconds. So these local subduction zone earthquakes are long, slow rollers. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, honey, was that an earthquake? It's, honey, when is it going to stop?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of earthquake means you have 15 to 30 minutes to get to high ground. If you're there already, stay put. If you're not, I don't care if it's in the middle of a cold and stormy night and you're in your bunny slippers. That means you have to get out and go. We have a tension with sirens and no sirens. I want a siren on my corner. Well, the sirens have nothing to do with the local event, which is our big issue.
Right.
Sirens only tell us what Wolf Blitzer tells us on CNN, that an earthquake happens somewhere else. In several hours, small waves will arrive. People confuse sirens, thinking sirens will somehow warn us about the big earthquake or the big tsunami that's coming. No, the earthquake is our warning that the big tsunami is coming. So the three things you need to know, again, circling back to the first one, what to be afraid of. Sirens? No. Earthquakes? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make sure we worry about the right things. There's enough to worry about in this world. Let's not over-worry ourselves. We worry about earthquakes. The second thing we need to know is, in that earthquake scenario, where's that high ground? How we started this conversation. Where is that high ground? Not only where I live, but where I work, play, pray, shop, recreate, all that kind of thing. The third thing we need to know is the first thing that's going to come to mind, and that's, what are my loved ones doing? How do I reconnect with my loved ones? We've had an earthquake. I'm moving to high ground. What are my loved ones doing? Too late then to call them on their cell phone and ask them what to do. We need to have that conversation around the dinner table tonight. My instruction would be, since we're probably going to be all hither and yon and not together when this happens, is, as individuals, we duck, cover, and hold during the earthquake, survive the earthquake. We brush ourselves off. If we're at high ground, we stay there. If we're not, we get there, and we stay at high ground overnight, because those waves will come in and out all day and all night long. The next day, we then go and look for our loved ones at the Red Cross shelter or at home or somewhere else. What we tend to do is instruct people to, everybody go to the school and we'll get the kids at school, or everybody come back home. Well, that instruction just put everybody in motion through the inundation zones.
Right.
People need to get to high ground, stay there overnight, let the tsunami stop, and then come back and hug each other. It's not, again, these instructions are not complicated, but they're very important. They're simple, but they're critical. And so your loved ones need to know that they need to save themselves and come find each other afterwards.
Yeah.
It's going to be a horrible day or two when you're not together, but the only worst case scenario would be not to find people.
So your kids, each kid needs to know, if you have children, they need to know what to do and where to go on their own.
Correct.
Because they may be at the pool, they may be at school, they may be doing something else where you're not physically with them.
And they need to know not only what they need to do, but they need to know to resist a parent that says, oh, don't worry about it. Or they need to grab the hand of the kid they're playing with in the playground and run to high ground. In Japan, this happened during an in-service day at 3:30 in the afternoon. And there are many stories of the kids that went through, and they do a lot of drills, you know, grabbing their little brother and sister and moving to high ground when the parents were at work. And so Kids are great. Up to about 10 years old, they follow instructions pretty well. After 10, you know, kind of bets kind of are off. But kids knowing those instructions is very important.
We've talked about the communities along the coast. What about going in between? Are there spots that are particularly safe or particularly dangerous traveling from place to place?
Between Warrenton and Gerhardt, I'm aware of the fact that I'm in a fairly low area. That would be fairly difficult to get area that's high enough in the amount of time I have. So knowing where your high ground is on the North Coast and the Long Beach Peninsula isn't that hard. It's something that we haven't had to worry about because we have not experienced an earthquake since white settlement, and we don't have it in our cultural DNA that these things happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about all the communities here except for the one that has the most people in it, and that's Astoria. What about Astoria, and what does it face in this situation?
For Astoria, the issue is the earthquake. People ask, will the tsunami come up the Columbia River? And sure, I mean, the tides go up to Bonneville, right? So the water will have some effect. But the inundation in the river is not going to be the big deal. For Astoria, it's going to be the earthquake. We're a steep hill. We have 300-plus active earthquakes already mapped. Many of them will slide after 3 to 5 minutes of an earthquake. Everything flat that's downtown is on fill material after the fire. Fill material turns into jello.
Right.
On top of that fill material, we have beautiful 1920s Art Deco unreinforced masonry buildings on top of fill material. The point is, Astoria's earthquake scenario is going to be really severe in the flat areas downtown, and the hilly areas around it will be landslides. And so Astoria is going to have our hands full even before the tsunami wave arrives. I think we tend to downplay that or not really get that. We seem oftentimes to be a sense of immunity to the tsunami thing. Like, we don't have to worry about it here. But a couple points. One, again, our vulnerability is the earthquake. The other thing is, people in Astoria live all over the place. I mean, you know, people in Astoria in any given day are from Napa and Seaside and Olney, and so we're from all around. And so we really are a regional population, and whatever town we happen to be in at the time is somewhat irrelevant. We need to know where the safe areas are in all the towns we go to. So let's think through that scenario. We're in Astoria. All of a sudden, the earthquake happens. We're fleeing to high ground. In places that, like towns, Seaside, Gerhardt, the places, the buildings that are in the inundation zone will be wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
The places that are just out of the inundation zone will be just fine. Mm-hmm. The earthquake is long and slow, and if you're a wood frame house, you flex and you do pretty well. Again, those concrete buildings that are unreinforced don't do well. I'm envisioning people that are in the inundated affected area will be fleeing uphill to the residences that are okay, in which there is food in the pantry, medicine in the medicine cabinet, and beer in the fridge. So we have caches in situ all throughout our communities. What our communities need to understand is we're going to be having all kinds of neighbors coming running up the hill. So we need to expect it's going to be neighbor helping neighbor. So do I need to like go find my kit as I try to outrun the tsunami? Or do I want to get to high ground and use somebody else's kit?
Right.
And around here, we have enough second homes and seasonal homes. There's a lot of housing stock out of the inundation zone in the North Coast. Go there.
And so each and every one of us and each member of our families needs to know that wherever I happen to be on the North Coast at the moment when I feel that earthquake, and I may not be at home, I need to know what to do. I need to know where I'm going. And I need to understand that things that we take for granted, like telephones and cell phones and so on, probably won't be working for some time. And to have that knowledge in your head so when it happens, you're ready to roll.
And your loved ones know enough that they can trust that you will do the right thing so that they can do the right thing.
Patrick, thank you.